following is an RED Podcast Network production, bringing on-demand geek audio straight to your eardrums one podcast at a time. To listen to more great geek audio podcasts, check out the RED Podcast Network at REDpodcastnetwork.com, iTunes, and Stitcher Radio. Welcome to the 11pm Somewhere podcast. My name is Ian, and we take a trip into where real beer means real beer. So this week on the show, what I did was I actually caught up with the very first of the brewers that I wanted to sit down and chop it up with and talk about what they're doing brew-wise and what they're talking about with their beers and their future, their breweries and their projects and so on. And this is what I like to call the 11pm Somewhere Brewers of Ireland series. So I sat down with Niall Phelan from the Rye River Brewing Company, who most people know and associate with the McGargles beer brand. So I caught up with Niall on Tuesday. We sat down over a pint in O'Keefe's, which is a pub here in Kilcock. So what I'm going to do is, I'm going to, without further ado, jump into that interview. It is Tuesday evening, and I'm here with Niall from the Rye River Brewing Company, and we're going to talk about the Rye River Brewing Company, the McGargles brand, and all the horseshit headaches and hassles of setting up a craft beer brewery in Ireland today. So, Niall, what I want to, first off, I'm going to get the obvious bullshit out of the way. What in the heck would make you guys want to leave a giant like Molson Coors to go and set up yourselves?
The answer is in the question. It is a giant. It's corporate. I'm not a very corporate person. I don't like boardrooms, and I don't like lots of meetings. And to be honest, I got to a place in early 2013 when I was travelling so much that I just wasn't seeing my kids, and my family comes first. And just at that same time, Alan had the opportunity to take redundancy. He didn't know what I was doing, I didn't know what he was doing. But he then told me he wanted to take redundancy during a restructure. I didn't tell him I was planning on leaving as well. I just agreed to finish up at the end of the year, around June or July 2013. And literally I announced about 2 weeks later to my team, my leadership team or senior team, that I was leaving, Alan being one of them. And he literally grabbed me outside the door and went, "What the fuck are you going to do?" And I went, "Well, what the fuck are you going to do?" And he said, "Well, I'm going to get into craft beer." And I was like, "Well, I'm probably going to get into craft beer as well, but I'm looking at some food things as well." And he was like, "Well, I don't want to go up against you in the market." And I said, sort of vice versa, like. So that was it. We got together. He was leaving for exactly the same reasons as me. He was travelling 4 days a week, had a new baby on the way, and he was getting dragged into more and more corporate crap. And we just wanted to get out and do things differently. So after that, it happened really quick. Over the next 3 or 4 weeks, we smashed together a plan, came up with the idea for McGargles, came up with the idea for the brewery in Kilcock, and started to pull it all together. And that was it.
Yeah. So one of the things we want to also get out of the way up front as well is there's sort of been rumours going around. They said, oh, that the Rye River Brewing Company and McGargles, considering you also have the San Miguel distribution, that it was a stealth brewery for Molson Coors. And one of the questions that comes up, you know, just definitively, is Molson Coors at all involved in the brewery?
No, but it'd be fucking genius if they were, wouldn't it?
It would be great.
If any big fucking PLC company ever had the bollocks to do something like that, I would actually respect them for it. But no, they're not at all. In fact, it's the opposite. If you read the paper on Sunday, I'm in the middle of a high court battle with them that I've initiated. So far from being supported by them or any other brewery, myself and Alan have our arses and everything else we own on the line to try and get this up and running. We were chatting to someone today. They were asking us, you know, the same. Everyone keeps asking us, who owns the business? And I go, well, me and Alan and Tom, we own 80-odd% of it between us. And then I turn around and go, I have like €2 in the fucking bank. I have nothing left. So yeah, we funded everything ourselves, and we've got a little bit of support from the banks, but we've literally got everything we own on the line.
So there we go. I think that clarifies that. Molson Coors not involved in man in a court battle. Interesting. Always good stuff and fun for that. I've seen some of the talk about your brewery on places like the Bure forums. So how does it sort of make you feel in one respect when you're trying to set out for something new? You're in a market which is in Ireland is growing. It's real exciting. It's vibrant. There's so many like great ideas, and there's guys out there so eager to do the craft beer thing, following in the footsteps of what went on in the US for the past 25 years, the UK for arguably the last 10 years. And what's been going on in Europe for like centuries at real beer. So like, how does it sort of make you feel when you see sort of people who like giving you a punch in the ribs when you're just trying to like box your way into trying to get going?
I don't read much of it, to be honest, but I don't think these lads live in the real world. I've put my life on the line, and my buddy has put his life on the line to set up a business, creating about 30 jobs, organising for the first commercial brewery to be built in Ireland in over 100 years, because we could have gone and done it in China for fucking half the price. We could have got it done in Canada for 30% less. But I'm helping some jobs and some lads out in Dundalk and bringing an industry back to Ireland that hasn't existed here in a couple of 100 years. And so I don't think they live in the real world, you know. You go and you brew your product with someone you trust in the UK to make sure that it's done right. And that's what we did. And we were upfront with all our customers. And people come in and they believe we're, you know, conspiracy. And that we're, you know, we've got a ton of funding behind us. I tell you, I'd sleep better at night if I fucking did. I just don't think they live in the real world. I don't know. I don't know any of these guys, so you know, I don't know what their perspective is. They're entitled to either like my beer or hate my beer. I don't really care. My beer wasn't designed for people on Bjor. It was designed for people who currently drink Heineken, Budweiser, Carlsberg, Coors Light beers that I don't really enjoy or think are great. And I'd love to see people come out and try beers with more flavour that are brewed with speciality malts and hops. But I'm not going to win over a beer critic, because I'm not aiming my beer at the guy who wants 70 IBUs or something that he's going to drink and can't taste his dinner for the next 2 days. My beer is entry level craft beer. It's where the market's going to be. How else is the market going to grow? You know, it's not the half a percent of people who know their hop varieties and malt varieties. These are just people coming out of regular beer who know that they're drinking something that's just not quite good enough, and they want to go try something different and maybe locally sourced, which is what we're trying to do. So yeah, I'm not really bothered. They can do what they want, but you know, they've all placed bets on whether or not we'll be here in a year. I'd like them to come and put their money where their mouth is, because I'll take those bets. The last three businesses I've been involved in have been a pretty big success. And Coors, we started off with one person in Ireland and finished with 85 in 3 years. So, you know, come on, put your money where your mouth is. Let's go.
You know what? You raise an interesting point there, and there was some stick sort of given towards you guys about the beer being an Irish brand, brewed in the EU, and that was something which you were quite keen to put it out in the label. You didn't hide it away particularly in the label either, I have to say, and that it was outsourced to a foreign brewery to meet your supply demands, which you'd kind of gone through before, that like you couldn't find anyone who was going to be able to manufacture to the volume that you'd already lined up in Ireland.
And someone that I know and trust well enough to produce the beer the way I want it.
You guys did clarify that, I think it was back in November. I think it was either yourself or Alan that jumped up onto the bureau boards and clarified, hey, this is why we did this. Are you kind of surprised by some people who are like, well, you brew in the UK, but you've an Irish brand?
Well, we say Irish family brewers. I don't say anywhere my product is manufactured in Ireland. I will, since my brewery's up and running, I'll say brewed in Kilcock with pride, even though I'm a dope. And that'll be hard to take. But I love living out here, so I'll happily shout about that. I think it's important. And with the history of brewing in Kilcock, it's important. But look, you know, I don't know a craft beer company in Ireland that doesn't send some of their product to be bottled in the UK. And a lot of them outsource their excess volume to the UK, you know. And the easiest thing I could have done was go on and print a list of them off on Bjor. But to be honest, I couldn't give a shit. You know, I'll brew my beer where I want to fucking brew my beer. And that will be in Kilcock. All of it will be in Kilcock when my brewery goes in. It'll be the biggest brewery in the island, on the island. Craft brewery. I'm not planning to take on Guinness yet. But it'll be the biggest brewery on the island. And it'll be the most state-of-the-art brewery on the island, because I want to do it right. So, that, you know, people have their perspectives. I have mine.
Sort of going to the whole brand thing of this, where the heck did the McGargles brand name come from? The character names, the beer names as well, like they're really odd.
And that's the whole idea, it's meant to be odd. It's not necessarily meant to be funny, it's just meant to be absolutely fucking ridiculous. Me and Alan were sitting around and we were saying, you know, if we do this, it can't be another fucking beer brand with a round or oval label on it, you know, and it can't be built on the fact that oh, we're just an Irish beer. It has to have something different about it. So the beers have to be exceptional, in our view. And at the same time, the brand has to be something a little bit different. Otherwise, what's the point, like? And to be honest, we had no fucking ideas. We weren't coming up with anything good. Everything we were talking about was completely shit. And we were sitting around pulling our hair out. Something happened. I got a text or a call or something like that. And I won't name the person, but we all have one or two mad fuckers in our family, right? It's an Irish thing. I think the more I talk to people around the world, it's not just an Irish thing, but I think it's a special Irish thing. We all have someone to the extreme of fucked up in our family. And I got a text about someone in my distant family who is like that. And I just started laughing. And I was telling Alan the story of what happened. And he went, and I went, there's fucking one or two in every family. And then we went, imagine there was a whole fucking family of them lads. Can you imagine what they'd be like and what they'd be up to? I mean, they wouldn't have a patch on travellers, like. They'd be fucking disastrous. So we sort of came up with that, and we said, well, right, every character has to be based on someone we know or someone we've come across. And so every single character is based on someone we know. They may or may not be in our family, but it's based on something we know. And we've taken that and we've probably made an extreme version of it. So just like Mario Rosenstock will highlight the flaw in Roy Keane or someone else, we've just gone, you know, you remember your one growing up, like, and everyone knew, right, except the husband, that she was out sleeping with everything around the place. And everyone had, there's one of them in every town, and they all talked about it in Irish, and that, you know, in the pub. And down the church, your woman is there, and she's in confession, and she's holier than thou. And then there was always a granny who was the head of the family. Every Irish family, the granny is the head of the family. And so that's where our granny came from, and it's based on someone I knew. So the stories and the stuff that sit behind them are real. It's part of Irish life. I'm sure there's people working in the IFSC who don't leave Dublin who don't understand that part of life. But I spend my weekends in Donegal, and I see that part of Irish life, and I love it. The uniqueness, there's something in Ireland which just, we can have the crack, we can take the piss out of ourselves all the time, but it doesn't stop us from doing what we're going to do. We're so fucking ambitious under it. And that's what the brand's all about. It's not twee. It's not Ireland out of leprechauns. And you can choose to see it like that if you want. But as the characters develop and the stories develop, people will understand, actually, I know a lad like that. I know someone like that. And they'll just, that's the whole idea behind it. And 99% of people have got that and just fucking go, that's mental. And I spent Saturday night in London with a dwarf called Peter, who dressed up as a buddy, a Knock Knock Ned, and went around banging a sword on people's table telling them to drink McGarrett's. It's a deadly crack. You never do that in Molson Coors, like. That's what the brand's about.
That's actually, you brought up sort of two things. You actually brought up one of the words that some people had said, again, brand was twee. Some people brought up like phrase like paddy whackery, which I love that word as it is. And this, and you've already explained sort of the decision about why it was sort of geared towards that. But is it like sort of with the export market in one mind, or is it just purely down to just like shits and giggles?
It's just shits and giggles. We don't care. Honestly, it's just like, what the fuck can we do that's a bit mad? You know, our sampling nights in pubs are literally going to be little people and grannies doing sampling, not girls in tight t-shirts with their boobs hanging out. But if you're sitting in a pub in Dublin on a Saturday night and some lad, you know, 3'2", comes over to you and bangs a sword on the table and starts telling you to drink a beer, you're going to stand up and take notice. And you might do a bit of juggling and he might have a bit of crack with you, like, but he'd be far from tea. These are, you know, he'd be a smart old fecker, like, and he'd be talented. It's not, you know, you can call it paddy. I don't understand how it's paddy whackery when we're all fecking Irish, like. If an American lad did it, you know, it's not, you know, he's after me fucking Lucky Charms. The beer is how I see Irish life and how I see people around Ireland, and I love it. It's not a piss taking him, and it's not me having a go at anyone. It is literally me enjoying the fact that this time last year I decided that I wasn't going to move all over the world with a big corporate company. I was going to stay here, and the reasons were, I fucking love Ireland, love living here. And I couldn't see myself living anywhere else, despite the pissy weather and the corrupt politicians and all the bullshit that goes on in Manama. I actually love this country because there's nowhere on earth that you get people like this. And that's what the brand is designed to celebrate.
That's actually a sort of really noble sentiment. I think a lot of us can actually agree with that as well. Like, you know, despite all the headaches, hassles, horse shit, weather, politicians, and all the rest of that crap that goes with it, they're the kind of things that, like, Irish people generally love Irish, other Irish people for. I want to get into sort of talking about the beers and moving away from the sort of pseudo-political horse crap.
Yeah, yeah.
The beers themselves.
Nice.
Yeah. the beers. Brave to go with, like, the red ale, understood, that's because it's is particularly sort of Irish. The IPA, again, Irish, and in some respects, take the Guinness origin story, believe what you will about that. But Pilsner being in there and not a porter slash stout, a little surprising for a startup, not going in with the dark stuff.
It's surprising considering my master brewer has worked for Guinness for the last 16 years. If we do a stout, it's going to be a different stout. It's not going to be a take on Guinness. I'm not looking to take on Guinness. I just think Guinness is pretty good beer. It's I think there's better stouts out there, but you know, it's not bad. In America, if you had Guinness with that market share, people, craft beer drinkers, would be fucking delighted. But yeah, it was just, we wanted to go with something different, to have this sort of romantic notion about pre-prohibition and the quality of beer in the US, and that's what our Pilsner was designed to be. It was what a Pilsner slash lager, whatever you want to call it, was like in pre-prohibition times in the US. And it's fuller, it's not like a Czech Pilsner, it's not like a German Pilsner, it's not meant to be. When anyone asks me, they get the answer. Most people who make assumptions about these things don't tend to ask a simple question. One click on our webpage and you've emailed me, like. So it's meant to be pre-prohibition Pilsner. We will do a stout, but it'll be something unusual. We might do a regular stout for the export market. I wouldn't rule that one out. We've had a lot of requests from the US and from the UK already. It's the first thing we're asked for. And God knows Steve knows how to brew a bloody good stout, like. So yeah, we might do that. I don't think we'll do anything big on stout in Ireland, but we have a couple of ideas for some quite wacky stouts, because we're looking at 14 new beers this year. So
14 beers, shit, that's ambitious.
Yeah, we've already got 4 extra done, sort of summer lager, made with some beautiful speciality hops that just bring out this little refreshing kick at the end of it. There's nothing in it. We don't, at the minute, we haven't played around with additional ingredients on the current beers, so it's just barley and hops and yeast and water, the usual stuff. But this had the type of hop we're using in this just almost gives it a little citrus kick at the end of it. But it's still quite a full lager, so that's nice. So the batch was just trial finished today, came out of the final tanks today. So I'll hopefully taste that this weekend cold. We're doing an Irish Bramble wheat beer made with blackberries, cherries and cassis. That just finished today as well, actually. Came out of tanks, so that got bottled today. Literally, I've got 50 bottles of each to trial. These will all be brewed in the new brewery. So I'll have that. If we're happy with the batches, we'll put them in the Dublin Craft Beer Cup at Altec in a couple of weeks' time. If we're not, we'll go back around and tweak them before the brewery opens. And then I've got a couple of unusual ones on trial at the minute, which I'll happily share with you when they come out.
Nice.
Don't want to talk about it right now, but a couple of really unusual ones. We're looking at some pretty, I would call extreme in my mind. I don't think the future of craft beer is going way up the bitterness scale. I think it's about introducing different flavours and almost bringing a ready, steady, cook style approach to brewing. And I was in a brewery in the US in Denver that did this. The lads would actually turn up on a Monday morning, having been in Tesco equivalent or Walmart, with a shitload of ingredients. And they just decide who brought the best ingredients and brew something from that, and I go in the mash tun. So that's the sort of stuff we'll do. Some of the beers we'll just release in keg. We might do one or two cask, Some of them we release in limited edition bottle, we just sell in the cafe. Some of them we release to all the supermarkets, and you know, we do for export as well. But we have our plan, we have our 14 new beers. Like two other brewers in the background who work with Steve, and they're absolutely amazing. So the three guys work together, and they're a silent partner in our business actually. Nothing to do with any big company. These guys are educators in Broome, so they train, but they're good guys. So we're lucky that we've got that expertise in the background. Everything is checked with those guys, and some of the recipes come through are cracking. We've actually found an old ghost beer, an old style of wheat beer from Austria that practically isn't brewed anywhere else in the world right now, that we're going to try and bring back to life, trying to find the ingredients. And then there's other things, like you've got a guy at the minute with 200 acres, we're looking to know we grow all our barley for us in Ireland. I'd like, that's one thing I'd love to do, is have all my barley come from Ireland. That's it.
Yeah, that'd be actually really good, especially because like sort of price on things like wheat and barley and everything else, apart from the big sort of brewers taking up the lion's share of those, well, then you've also got the bread manufacturers rolling in behind us, and again, any sort of bad crop seasons that impacts prices, and sort of being able to control your price of your source materials, especially sort of on the larger source materials for what it is ultimately, you know, really smart move, I'd say, in respect.
Yeah, it's a, well, you say it's smart from a value chain or, you know, pricing perspective, it's probably not the motivation behind it, to be honest, because you've still got to find someone to malt the barley for you. Mm-hmm. And I've looked at putting the maltings in for Kilcock, and it's just too bloody dear. But I think it'd be great to have your barley grown locally. I mean, I'd love to find a way to grow our hops locally. I think we will grow hops in the brewery, because the steam, the natural sort of environment in the brewery, the warmth you're going to get from the brewery, means we can actually grow hops indoors, and enough probably to do two or three batches a year. The other thing I'd like to do is get our customers to grow some hops for us at home. Give out hop kits, get them to grow it, have a harvest party, invite them in, and you know, use those to brew some beer, and then people become really involved in the beer. But I love to see as much of that come from Irish sources as possible, because if I can give a farmer guaranteed income, for barley, and get him to grow organic barley for me, he's going to get a higher return for me, he's guaranteed income, he knows what price he's going to get for it, he's more likely to invest in the land, he's going to hire some people to help him on the land, you know, it just has that natural knock-on effect. He's going to go spend some of that money in the local economy, a couple of businesses might pick up as a result, all that sort of stuff, and he's just about trying to drive that back into locality.
Yeah, that's we're getting sort of very big into this now in Ireland, this whole thing of like buying local in terms of like local restaurateurs setting up local ingredients and the rest of it, and we're getting very big into it. Beer is the one thing which we're kind of a little strange on. And so one of the things you touch on there, sort of growing your own hops. I'm kind of like, I like my hops, I like knowing about my hops, I like knowing about their profiles, when you use them in the brewing process and the rest of it. I'm kind of a growing beer geek, as it was. I'm like a sort of Padawan learner in the hop world at the moment, and I'm working my way up to hopefully becoming a hop master at one stage. I'd love to talk about, if you're all right with it, sort of what sort of hops you're actually using in your beers, so what ones you are sort of happiest with, just sort of from a technical point of view. Again, a lot of guys in Ireland, they see in the UK, like guys like BrewDog, they're happy to share every aspect of the beer. American brewers, same thing as well. Ireland, I'm noticing, we're kind of like not so much about sharing the details of what goes in our beers.
Jesus, I mean, any decent master brewer in about 10 minutes will find out what hops are in our beer, if he knows what he's tasting like. I've actually been in with retailers in Ireland, you know, people like Ruth Devon, he was able to taste our beer and tell us what hops we have in it and what malted barley speciality malts we use.
Ruth, like, anyone who doesn't know Ruth, by the way, over in Devonies and Dundrum, like, Ruth, there's fuck all she doesn't know about craft beer.
She's a legend in craft beer, and she's one of the pioneers. And she's had a lot of shit from people as well, actually. But, you know, she's pretty damn good at what she does. And she's got a taste for beer. Like, I've only seen it with sort of beer cicerones and master brewers, but yeah, Ruth is all over. She's brilliant. So if you're looking for decent to get into craft for the first time, that's the place to go.
Yeah, most definitely. I'd have to recommend that. My buddy Frank would always say, go over to Ruth, she'll hook you up and she won't see you wrong.
So, I mean, if you want, Ian, I'll give you the... I'll actually send you an email with all the hops and the malt varieties. You can put it up on your blog.
Yeah.
I've no issue with that. By beer, I'll just go through them here with you. So we use Fugel hops, and then we use Vienna and Cara Malt in the red ale.
Nice.
We have in the IPA, we got Amarillo and Simcoe. Is what I'm using in there.
Right. Yeah. The Amarillo was one of the fucking three.
No, we need to. We need to lay up that a bit later in the brew. It's the aroma is not strong enough on the IPA. I'm happy enough with the general flavour, but 70% of your taste actually comes from the smell, and it affects how your perception of what you're drinking. So we're just going to move the lay hop on a little bit later, and we'll do a bit of tweaking on that, and in the next brew there should be a much deeper aroma on the IPA before it hits you, because it was lost. The brewery that we use, the guys we know, the brewery's actually just too bloody efficient. It soaked up all the aroma too quickly, so we've got to move it by about 7 or 8 minutes, that's all. That's how delicate the brewing process is. 6, 7, 8 minutes can just make a massive difference to what you're doing. And then on we're using Tattinger and Harris Booker. So I'll give you the list, happy to show you. I wouldn't publish it, but I'll show you the full recipes and all the specs and everything, and have, if you want, Steve the brewer, sit and go through them with you, any detail you want. You can share general stuff out then. I wouldn't share the detail publicly, but you know, happy to share anything like that.
You know, that's the privilege about doing like the podcast and everything else. Sometimes I get to see this stuff and I get to know this stuff. I don't get to share it and I get to keep it for myself. It's just kind of like I'd say it's probably the bonus to it as well.
That's why beer is good.
Yeah, like my buddy Frank right now, he started off with doing the Cooper's kits to do his home brews.
Yeah.
First beer didn't help him so much, and he'd admit it as well, it wasn't particularly great. Second beer, he started to hop that beer as well. It was a little bit better, but very honeyish in this thing, but it developed as it got to like bottle ferment more, and now we're at the point where he's going to go and start with like an ale kit, and he's going to try and use some of the same hops as in Dead Pony, because it's one of the things he wants, but he wants the ABV taken up, because that's a little weak in its ABV, to be fair to us.
We have a 1 hectolitre plant going in alongside the big brewery, so anyone that's home brewing is welcome to come down and spend the day with Steve, get a bit of advice from the master brewer, work with him. You know, as long as they're happy to just bake the ingredients that go into the 100 litres, we'll brew it for them and ferment it on site, and they can have it at the end, you know, throw it into a couple of kegs for them, or if they're happy to pay for bottles, we'll bottle it up for them and they can take it home. It's there, that's what it's there to do, it's there to experiment.
That's actually a really good offer, is it there? You know, if you're looking to kick around a beer in a decent volume, again, do it in Ireland, because the problem you said you had was you couldn't find someone who could manufacture to the volume or allow you to even get out the door in the volume, and now you're sort of doing that yourself where you're looking to provide that as a service for people.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we're probably not looking to contract brew for a whole lot of other brewers, but I would, you know, I know what it takes to start up a business, so if there is another brewer out there who wants a bit of help and support and is trying to get off the ground, you know, it takes a lot of cash to build a goddamn brewery, so if, you know, it helps if you can contract brew your first 1 or 2 batches and get a bit of cash in and put it towards the brewery. We, you know, if the people had the same sort of attitude to beer as us and same, you know, approach, we'd happily work with them. It's more about that than, you know, if they're willing to pay. For me, I like to work with people I like to work with. And then, you know, on the 1 hectolitre plant, that's probably more for home brewers who'd like to produce something a little bit bigger, or I'd like to work with a master brewer for a day. And Steve won the JS Hoff Award. Only got 5 people alive who've won it. He's a pretty talented brewer. So, you know, getting to work with him for a day is pretty good. And our plan is that a lot of guest brewers come in from Belgium, Austria, even from the US, do brews with Steve. He's got a lot of contacts like that during the year. So, you know, you're going to get access to plenty of expertise there.
Yeah, the whole guest brewer thing is actually a really cool concept. As I said in the podcast a couple of times before, one of the things that I really appreciated was in the last sort of year or two, you had a Discovery Channel which had Dogfish Head and talking about the guy, what they were doing over there. You also had the channels in the UK, I can't remember the name off the top of my head, but they had the Brew Dog series where James and Mark went over to the US, kept meeting with all these, I think it was like 7 episodes, they'd meet with a different brewer from a different part of the US, Notorious or Victorious for its beer, and they would actually brew a specialty beer with them as a guest beer. And as of course anyone knows, BrewDog tend to do an awful lot of guest work as well. You see that with the Mick and our beers, which are mind-blowing. Like, it's, so it's good that it's sort of Irish brewers are doing this as well, and you guys are looking to do it. One of the things I just want to sort of get into on just on the beer side of things, like I've already said to you, I've tasted your beer range, and the IPA, it was an alright IPA, if I'm honest with you. The red ale, utterly loved it. I thought it like was head and shoulders above an awful lot of red ales that I've tried, and red ales for me are always one of these Marmite kind of beers for me. And I don't know why it is. Maybe it comes back to like my own personal taste. Beer is a pretty subjective thing. And the Pilsner I thought was like decent as well. Like, I know you've said the like the red on Untappd like got way ahead of head and shoulders above everyone else, but in terms of like the sort of the IPA then and the Pilsner, sort of, do you think you're going to bring extra stuff on board with those, or like some of the, I think one person actually turned around and said there was an aftershave taste to the IPA, which is the weirdest thing I've ever heard. But
I don't drink beer when you're shaving. You know, it's going to taste like that with your shaving foam or shaving gel drops in your beer. I don't know how you get an aftershave taste off it. It's you know, the IPA needs a bit more layup, but actually is a balanced taste that we're trying to, you know, that if you came out of drinking Budweiser yesterday or anything yesterday, and the first craft beer you ever had was our IPA, I would hope that would keep you in the craft beer category and encourage you to stay in. If you come out of Heineken or Budweiser or Coors Light and you go and have a double IPA or triple IPA, chances are we've lost that person forever. Every one of us, every craft brewer, because they're going to go, what the fuck is that craft stuff about? I couldn't taste that half of it. I'd happily drink a double or triple IPA. I love them, you know, but I've been drinking craft beer for the last 6 years. So the IPA is designed to be a balanced entry-level IPA to bring people into the category. That's what our beers and the McGarrigle's ones are designed to be. And so the IPA, it does need a bit of tweaking. I think as soon as we got the beer and we tasted it, we said it, and I replied to somebody had asked me the question on Twitter or on, not on BR because I don't go on there, it was on something else, boards or something. I got an email saying, no, you should go check this out. And I went back in and said, no, actually guys, this needs to be tweaked straight away. We know it needs a bit of an update. The Pilsner is designed to be like that. It's designed to be a prohibition style Pilsner. I'm really happy with it. I would make one very tiny tweak to the balance of flavour on it as it comes out the second time. But we're more than likely going to rotate the Pilsner out for one of the new beers coming in around the end of March. So we're just trying to decide whether to do another batch or not, or whether just to rotate it out straight away. So the trials that we're doing on the new beers will depend on that. But they, you know, the Pilsner rates unbelievably on Untappd.
Just so we can sort of like people who obviously, because this is audio and I don't get to see the visual, now it's actually showing me sort of the scores off Untappd, and anyone who follows the podcast knows I am an Untappd whore. I love like clocking my beers on it. I love finding out more about beers and brewers on it. But I'm looking at the list here, and like sort of out of five, like when you're putting in like Tom Crean's, Franwell's, 8 Degrees, Barefoot, Freedom, Porterhouse, Sierra Nevada, Czech Pilsner, like Sam Adams, Porterhouse's Chiller. Again, these are like big name beers. Even BrewDog 77 Lager, which I am an utter like savage for. Like the McGargle's Pilsner has actually got a better average rating, like 3.65, and the BrewDog one is sitting at 3.32.
Yeah, and that's the thing, like you know. Yeah, the nice thing about Untappd is I use it because you can't manipulate it. No one can manipulate it. Either me or someone trying to do damage to my business. Because you put one rating for a beer in, if you go in and change the rating, it disregards the last rating you put in. It asks you, do you want to update that rating? So I like it. We check it every week. Our aim is to have all our beers above 4. So we won't be happy until they're above 4. Our aim is to have our beers benchmarking against Irish and international beers and being the number one choice of those beers. We select them quite aggressively. So our IPA is sitting at number 4. We're not happy about that. So we've been beaten by Sierra Nevada Pale Ale, Dogfish Head 61 IPA from international perspective, and Galway Bay IPA has beaten us in Ireland. Actually, the other IPAs from Ireland are below us. Mean Times, William Brothers, Goose Island are below us, Galway Hookers Pale Ale, but I'm not happy with that.
The O'Hara's one being far below was really surprising. My buddy Frank isn't drinking enough O'Hara's IPA, because like, he alone should account for the high score on that.
You can only ever put one score in that on tap, and that's the beautiful thing.
But he has like about 50% of the check-ins for that on untapped.
He's damaging them.
Frank, give it up, you're damaging them.
It's I like it. I think it keeps us honest, and for me, that's I'm not going to listen to some, I'm only Carl Media, who thinks I'm funded by Molson Coors and I'm out to produce craft beer. That's what I listen to. People go on there, they'll rate my beers, from all over the world. A couple of people will go on there with an agenda and rate me low. I'm sure I have a couple of friends who'll go on and rate me high, even if they don't like the goddamn beer. That all balances out. What I want to get is thousands of ratings on there and see an honest reflection of, is my beer good enough? Because if my IPA doesn't creep up the list there when we tweak it, I'm going to rotate it out and do something different, because it's not good enough from my perspective then. We've got to be at the top of our game in all our beers from a consumer's perspective.
Yeah, that's pretty honest. I mean, disclosure here, and I suppose I should have done this up front, but I'm doing it now anyway, because my podcast gets to do it my way. I actually know Niall a while back, going through his family, because his brother, I know his sisters, I know very well, and I actually wasn't particularly kind to his IPA and Untappd either. I wasn't like harsh or like rude or ignorant about it, but I was like, look, this for an IPA, just straight up off the bat, for being your average IPA in the mix, can't go far wrong. Would I put it next to my Punk IPA? No, because I don't consider it's punching in the same thing as Punk. It's not aiming for that type of person.
Exactly.
And I don't think it's aiming for the people who are into their hardcore IPA either.
Yeah.
And I always use Brewdog as an example. And the reason being is because I think they're the guys who shout the loudest, while a lot of people are quite happy to sit back and not be out there and loud and vocal about craft beer. And I think it's one of the shames we have in Europe. In the US, they are so happy to go out there and fight and be vocal, and in Europe we seem to be a little bit quieter about it. So I love when the guys stand up there and they do things like put their naked asses on the Parliament building for a laugh, and get into like almost like verbal fisticuffs with UK politicians about strong beers. So I always like vouch for them on that respect. But like, it's good to see like you're up there and you're in the mix. Like, again, you're just behind like Dogfish's Head 61 IPA. Like, I would consider it like an amazing IPA. And Sierra Nevada's Pale Ale, like, if you want to talk about like your standard for like IPA in the world right now, I would say that is probably the gold standard.
Yeah, I mean, Sierra Nevada are legends.
Are amazing brewers.
I'm happy to be that close to them, but I'm not happy that we're fourth on that list. I'll never be happy with that. And so, Steve's challenge will be to make that beer better and get it up there. Look, that's life. If we're not, I don't want to surround, you say you weren't particularly kind to us. Be fucking honest, that's all I ask people. Some people are going to like it, some people aren't going to like it. Just because you don't like it and I don't change it, that's my perspective.
Exactly.
Choose who I listen to.
Beer is subjective, and I think the great thing is, and I say this over and over again, the great thing about craft beer is that it makes you have an opinion about what the fuck you're drinking, which is the important thing that it does. Whereas you stick a pint of your piss water from InBev in a glass, you've no opinion because you're like sloshing it down your throat and you don't really care. Like, real beer makes you have an opinion. You either love it, you hate it, you form some kind of opinion about some aspect of it, the colour, the taste, the aroma, the aftertaste in your mouth, the texture of it going across your mouth in terms of the carbonation, whether it's high, low, whether it's a bit much, or any additional sort of specialty flavours that go into it. So like, when I say I'm like unkind, I'm just unkind from my perspective. I don't think it was that unkind. It was if you wanted an entry level IPA, I don't think there's anything wrong with it.
Have a fucking opinion, that's what you're here to do.
Exactly. So what I want to sort of get into a little bit more is the bringing in of the Rye River Cafe into the brewery as well.
Yeah.
That was the most surprising thing I heard announced last week. I was like, what?
Yeah, well, I'm showing in a shitty plan here. That's not the correct one, but it's
just... It beats the shit out of Ed and I would do, which would look like a two-year-old did.
What we didn't want to do, one of the things we said about our brand was, I want to be completely different than anything else out there. That's fine, people are talking about it, so we must be different. The other thing thing I wanted to do was I didn't want to put a brewery in an industrial estate. I like people to see what we do and how beer is brewed and get perceptions out of their head that chemicals and other stuff go into beer. You know, they do in the bigger breweries, absolutely. They use head retention stuff, they use fish filings to
clear pasteurization, all the rest of it.
Yeah, you know, pasteurization is not the worst thing in the world. If you want beer with shelf life on it, you got to pasteurize it or you got to microfilter it. Mm. You microfilter it, you know, the risk is higher of me making someone ill down the line. So the longer the beer is there, the other option is to bottle condition it. Mm. You have options, but some beers actually need to be pasteurized. So that's okay, because pasteurized is basically heating and cooling the beer. There's nothing added to it. When you start using PVP filters and things like that, that's when you're into messing. You're adding chemicals in, you're then stripping them back out. You're adding head retention filters, you're adding fish filings to clear the beer up. And that's what bigger breweries do, because they're producing on a mass scale, and the only way to produce stuff like a lager, which is actually quite a delicate thing to brew and make it consistent like that, is to use certain chemicals in the brew, you know. And that's just a fact of life. I actually had a story. I'm going to go off topic for a sec. Sorry.
No, go for it.
A friend of mine was very close, he lived in St. Louis, very close to the Budweiser family. And when ABI took over the Budweiser family, the master brewer had been around for years. No matter what you think of Budweiser, he talked to my buddy and he said, do you know the first thing the Anheuser-Busch guy said to me was, the biggest cost in your brewing process is this beechwood agent. We want that out. And the master brewer said, you take the beechwood agent out, I'm going to quit. Because that's the only thing this brand has left. And yet there was a big row between the Bush family and the and ABI over it, supposedly, but some heads got chopped. Anyway, why did we put the cafe in? We wanted to do something different. We wanted to show people brewing. We wanted to show people what we do, what a brewer does, what's involved. We wanted to show them the tanks. We wanted them to see everything. We wanted to do that in an environment that's not in an industrial estate. We also wanted to bring something into the middle of Kilcock rather than, you know, stick it outside in a faceless industrial estate. So the brewery is in the old Kelly's Bakery, which has been shut down since before 1990, late 80s.
It's true, Jim.
The Kelly family on the site go back to the 1700s. They had a small bakery in the 1700s. Distilling and brewing in Kilcock goes back to 1595, May 1595. And I have a copy of the license certificate that was granted to a guy called William England in 27th of May 1595 to produce Ishkebab whiskey. And then he also produced beer later on. In the 1700s, there was at least four breweries in the town. There was two distilleries, and there was at least three malt houses and four mills. It was a brewing and distilling town mecca in Ireland. It also has the barrel of oats. The barrel of oats is the Kilcock measure. It was invented here. It was the measure of grain all over Ireland for hundreds of years. The history of brewing in the town is just immense, and that was what won it over for me. And then we've got the Green Well out the back, which was part of St. Coca's Monastery, which is at the back of the bakery. So what we've done is we've created about a 4,500 square foot space, which is open plan cafe. I'd say if you've been in New York, Meatpacker District, industrial style cafe. We've got steel tiles that have been on the floor for at least 70 years. They're not being moved. The yellow lines on the floor, because it was a joinery up until a few weeks ago and pallet trucks were moving around it, have been left on the floor. We cleaned up, new lighting, painted, brand new kitchen, brewery shop, where you'll only be able to buy stuff that you can buy nowhere else. You'll buy our regular beers, but there'll be stuff there that we won't sell anywhere else. Stuff we produced in the 1 hectolitre plant. Bottle conditioned stuff that is just sitting there maturing, and you can decide to take it home and finish that off. The cafe I'm moving in, you'll get that food will step up in terms of not the quality but in terms of the availability, because Shauna spends her day turning people away.
Actually, I want to just mention this briefly. Niall says that Shauna turns people away. I kid you not, I've come down here in a weekday at lunchtime and you can't get a place to sit down. You can wait for an hour and you won't get, because they're just turning people away all the time. I mean, I think it got to the point where she said she had to eat, even for when she was doing events for people, she actually actually couldn't to keep the cafe open at some point and do the events that she was asking to like do all the catering for, like business out the door. And the food in there is exceptional. Like I'm a, like an utter nut for the pancakes and bacon.
Yeah, yeah.
Like I love just going out for that alone. I'm in for that.
Yeah, and that's one of their specialities. Actually, they sell it. I've never seen anyone sell so many pancakes
in Ireland as well. It's weird.
It's just it's something they started off doing and it's just taken off and become quite famous. So I think it was a no-brainer for me. Shona gets so many people through the door every day that moving that business and give, you know, she's going to quadruple the space she has right now. Plus there'll be a brewery shop in there. We've got some amazing plans for that part of the building. Nice outdoor area overlooking the canal, raised up over the road, and it's going to be completely open plan into the brewery. There is literally about an 8 metre wide opening in the wall looking at the brewery, and the first thing you see is the mill and the auger going into the brewery.
So you guys are actually going to mill on site as well?
Yeah.
Wow.
So buy our grain and we mill on a site. The mill is actually right in front of the opening, and then all the mashed and louder is the next thing you see. The brewery is 1.3 metres below the cafe. So you're looking down at it, which means that when the brewer comes up on his platform to add ingredients into the mashing, he's at your level and you can see what he's doing. And that'll be open all the time. And the idea being that the brewer is there and his team, brewing team, are there. And if you're in having a meal and you want to talk to the brewer, you know, you ask someone at the cafe, the brewer will come out and have a chat to you. And if you want to help with buying a beer, if you want to talk about ingredients or anything like that, he's there. That's the whole idea. And we'll run tours and we'll do other stuff and we'll run beer and food evenings. And we're also hoping to make it sort of, you know, a bit interesting in terms of running some private gigs in there, invitation only gigs in there. We've got some decent connections in the music industry that we're trying to use to get some decent sized bands in there. We won't be able to buy tickets for it. So the idea is just to create this centre in Kilcock that might get people out of Dublin and get out to Kilcock. And there's a few other things going on in Kilcock as well in terms of developments. If you add it all in, it starts to bring more people into the town.
Yeah, for those of, like, again, who aren't aware, like Kilcock is one of those towns that, like, while places like Leixlip did particularly well out of like Hewlett Packard and Intel going in there, and well, I think the town centre in Leixlip, you can pretty much say it's dead.
Other than a Friday or Saturday night.
Other than a Friday or Saturday night, Maynooth is still very much student town the way it is. Hasn't really progressed in any great shape or form from what happened there. But Kilcock is one of those towns that sort of remain on the periphery. There was no real investment by the council when industry left us. I remember when I was growing up here as a kid, like in the 80s, Kilcock was very much like an agricultural centre. On Saturday, they'd have the farmers coming in and they'd have their farmwares they'd sell before they fucked off into the meat market that used to be in Maynooth, where Tesco now stands. Pretty much where Tesco now stands, and the Tesco car, actually where Boots is in particular.
Brilliant.
Yeah, that always gives
me a great replacement.
Yeah, I know, great replacement. And Kilcock really didn't benefit from it, and it still very much remains one of those towns where it's on the periphery. And the town council as well have actually been surprising to me, like in terms, I'm deviating off slightly, but just to give a bit of a flavour, it is a forgotten town. So like when you're talking about like what you're doing in conjunction with some of the other announcements that were made by some of the other guys as well as what they're doing, it's incredible. I'm actually kind of surprised you didn't take over where Leaf was and just decided to like take that, because that's a huge fucking space.
It needs too much work. It needs to be knocked and rebuilt. Unfortunately it does, you know. We looked at that and we looked at a couple of other sites around the town. We were very focused on keeping it in Kilcock. Actually, I'm not from Kilcock. Most of my family happen to live up here now. Originally from Tala. Been in around Selbridge and sort of Strathaven for years. I've lived in England for a bit as well, but I've been in Selbridge and Strathaven with my wife and kids, and you know, since when I came back from London in 2005. So I have a thing for sort of Kildare, North Kildare in particular. But as the family moved up here, I had the same thing. I used to come into the town and go, it could be just so incredible. And what's interesting is, as I started to dig into the brewery and we met the local historian and stuff, the stuff that came out was phenomenal. Like, this was, if you were leaving Dublin to go west anywhere, this was the town. The market town was famous. You know, everything that was in the town was all known. Everybody stopped here for hundreds of years, and that's all gone. And it'd be nice to bring a little bit of that back.
You know what, it's funny when you say like the beer history that's here. I often like find, laugh my ass off when you head down to the, what's the pub in the centre, leaks up again, the big one, they all got part of the hotel.
Oh, the Courtyard.
Oh, the Courtyard Hotel, yeah. They like to pride themselves. They have a bar there called Arthur's Bar, and that entire section of the building just happens to sit on the very first Guinness brewery.
Yeah.
And I always think it's funny that they talk about it, and years later, when there's guys who are like trying to like just elbow in almost breweries into their pubs, they still haven't done this.
Yeah. Oh, I know. It's just, look, Guinness is, it holds a lot of jobs in Ireland. They invest a lot of money. They're a big brewer.
Sure, I know. Like, I've had like four generations of my family pass through it.
Yeah, and we should be proud of that. But there's more to Ireland in beer than Guinness, and I think that's what we need to bring to life a little bit. And I'll go out and happily have a Guinness any night of the week, like. But I'll pick a good craft beer over it every time.
Yeah, I would too. Like, even I say that as like parts of my family rolling their fucking graves about this. I can't believe we're slagging Guinness. No, I'm slagging Diageo Guinness. There's a difference.
But I mean, you know, coming back to it, we want this to be a place to attract people. We've got other plans for that site over the next 2 years, and we've some planning applications to make. But I would like to, you know, have that cafe up and running by the summer. The brewer will be in the next 3 or 4 weeks. The last bits of the tanks are being made. It has to get wet tested, so it gets pressure tested underwater in Dundalk. Not underwater, with water. In Dundalk, and I think that happens the week after next.
Actually, that's something really important I think you should talk about a little. And you and me talked on the phone previously before like setting this up, and you said to me you were having the tin for the brewery made up in Dundalk, and I was driving in the car and I was like, hang on a second, what do you mean you're having this stuff made in Dundalk?
It was a big thing. We talked to all the usual guys. We went to Germany, we looked in Canada, looked at the Chinese stuff for 2 minutes, looked at the UK guys, a couple of guys who make up breweries in the UK for craft breweries. We did a lot of research on it, and there was something about, you know, it wasn't sitting right every time we got these quotes in, and I actually would have had the brewery open probably about 3 or 4 months ago if I had just went with one of the simple solutions that we had. Much to the frustration of my business partner. And so we were chatting to a guy one day, and he said, you know what, I know a lad up in Dundalk and he makes tanks. And I was like, well, what tanks do you make? He makes tanks for the German breweries, and he ships them out, and he makes tanks for agricultural guys. Now, it's not a far stretch to go from making good quality tanks that are, you know, welded together right and manufactured right and insulated to actually producing a brewery, if you've got the right people designing the brewery and the engineers are talented enough. And we've no short of fucking talented engineers in the country that don't have a lot to do at the minute. And you know, so we went and met them and had a conversation, and it turned out that actually they wanted to get into building breweries because they saw it as a real part of the future of their business. Tony Healy is the guy's name, family business, his daughter works in the business, you know, he's about to move to a big site in Dundalk, and we've been working hand in hand with putting that brewery together, and he's going to make it a showpiece, and he's going to fly people in from around the world who want to buy breweries off him and show off this brewery. So
that's like an incredible thing. Again, you're talking about the whole thing. Okay, Dundalk isn't pretty particularly local to Kilcock, but you're talking about like being in Ireland, Irish stuff, sourcing stuff in Ireland. You know, again, it's sort of something which is important that we need to focus on as a country, like especially in growing industries. And make no mistake, craft beer in Ireland, in terms of the breweries they're setting up, it seems like there's one every other week setting up. I kind of find
it's not far off that at the minute. And you know, that's the one thing I would say. It's great to see it, but you're going to have an issue in a couple of years. There's too many breweries opening up. There's too many breweries in the planning place. It's not sustainable.
Any industry, really.
Yeah, you've got everybody and their auntie comes and talks to me about wanting to open up a brewery and ask for advice, and I want to get into craft beer. And most of the conversations go something along the lines of, okay, happy to meet you for a coffee. I mean, anyone for a coffee and have a chat to them, I'm happy to provide some advice. And if there are people I think I can help and work with, I'd help them. And if not, I'll go, listen, I wish you the best of luck. But I get all sorts of people come to me, and generally the questions I ask are, have you ever worked in beer before? And 99% of the answers are no. Have you ever brewed before? And some people go, I've home brewed. And some people go, no. And some people go, oh, I'm a chemist. So I study chemistry and I'm a biochemist and stuff, which is not far off brewing, you know. But generally, the answer is no, I haven't produced any commercial scale. Have you ever launched a business before? No. Have you ever sold beer? No. Do you know the route to market? No. Do you know how much the margins are? No. manager sit and go, sorry guys, I can't help you. Because it's an incredibly tough industry to make money in. And getting your grain cost wrong or your utility cost wrong by even a decimal place can put you out of business. Your cash flow is important. This is, you know, in terms of working capital and money, the amount of money you need to invest in the kit and equipment means that you're under pressure from day one to sell volume and to sell it to the right places, and at the same time not give your brand to every Tom, Dick and Harry. And so there's just too many guys getting into the industry with no experience, who aren't going and looking for people with experience. Jesus, by all means, if you want to go set up a craft brewery, fantastic. If you don't know what you're doing, come talk to me. I'll put you in touch with 10 or 15 people who know the industry, who might want to come work for you, who you can hire, bring them on board, get them into it in your home and dry them. The route to market's the single hardest bit to do. So I think what will happen is we'll end up with one or two breweries in Ireland who will make it on an international scale, and then we'll end up with two or three local successful brewers nationally around the country, but maybe a small bit of export, and then maybe 6, 7, 8 in local regions. And after that, I just don't know that the country can sustain, you know, that level of breweries that we've got out there now, because unless we see a ban on advertising and stuff like that, where Guinness, you know, can't spend 40 odd million a year. But then you go, well, where are they going to spend that money? They're going to put it somewhere. So they'll go and start spending it in the pubs again and trying to win the pubs back over and trying to give the publicans money to block out the craft guys. That's the bit, you know, people need to be careful of. It is a growing industry. It's a great industry to be in. But if you don't know the industry, partner yourself up with someone that fucking knows it inside out, or don't get into it.
Yeah, that's actually really important point, Al, that you're making, especially when I look at the US, 25 years of this going on in the US, and what we've come to know at this point is you've got the big boys that are out there in the craft beer world, okay, and they say craft beer, I mean real beer for some of these guys. Samuel Adams, real beer, no matter what you're going to look at. Sierra Nevada, real beer. And then you talk about some of the other big boys that are out there in the but you've also got these sort of local speciality breweries that you can only find their beers in their region, like Dogfish Head, for example. I'd say they're at the point where they've just crossed over where they can go sort of multi-state at this point, where you can go to multiple states, find it. But there's loads of beers that you can only find in particular states, or you can only find in particular cities. And in Ireland, if you look at the American craft beers / real beers that are out there, you can Goose Islands, again, that's traveled. Sam Adams traveled. Sierra Nevada's traveled. And then, like in the U, and think about it, even BrewDog, for example. Just again, I keep coming back to this, but it's a really pertinent example. Their biggest market is not even the UK. No. It's fucking Sweden.
Yeah. That's the thing. If you produce good beer, you'll get it out there. But again, you look at the UK, there's 2,500 breweries or something across the UK.
That's right, yeah.
Now, within that, you've got some regional brewers, like, and I say regional brewers, these guys produce a lot of volume. People like Green King and places like that. They do export some, but really in the craft world, you know, Freedom, Meantime, BrewDog, can you think of anyone else that's doing decent business in terms of national scale and export?
Williams Brothers, but I'd say even that's at small level when you think about it. They're not even anywhere near their potential. Great beers, but not near their potential.
No, and they're great guys actually. We know them. Alan, my business partner, has a good relationship with them, and Harveston are another one. Scotland has produced some decent beers, I think, because of the history of small batch whiskey. They know how to do it. But that's it. I mean, we're just saying probably 5 out of 2,500. There's not too, you know. So we need to think about that as we look at Ireland. There is only a certain amount that'll be successful. Now, a number of those breweries in the UK will close as well, or there'll be consolidation. But a lot of them will close. And in the US, you're actually seeing a lot of small breweries close as well. You are seeing thousands open up, but you're seeing a lot of them close, a lot of consolidation. Some of the more mature markets are changing. You're seeing the big guys coming in and buying small breweries because they've been losing share to them for so long. The market's going to change very, very quickly. I think the craft market in this market is going to change phenomenally in the next 3 or 4 years. And you know, the guys who have great beer, strong branding, understand the business will succeed. That's what's happening in the UK. The Meantime guys are ex-Miller. The Freedom guy is ex-Bass. Harveston, I think, isn't Chris, and the other guy in there, they're one of them ex-Heineken, one of them ex-Bass. Williams Brothers, I think, similarly have industry experience. It's not a coincidence, and most of the guys in the US who've been successful have industry experience.
And any of the VCs were going into these businesses and always say, hey, you need to take someone into your management team or your management board who's ex-industry as well. Which, and like I recently watched a video clip with, I think it was in the UK, where they'd Martin and James on, the James Cannon from the Dragon's Den, and he were, the advice that they'd given them with their experts was, you need to take someone on into your business in the industry. And the two boys, being the cavalier guys they are, were like, no, because they're going to change the culture in our business, change what we do in our business, and we kind of like the whole flying by the seat of our pants thing. And you know, I think they are like probably the exception that where they actually can fly by the seat of their pants, but it hangs on their personalities more than anything else. And even if you think about it, James, like out of the two of them, Martin's a brewer, James is the marketing guru, and James is a finance expert, and that's his background is in finance. And that's, so he's kind of leveraging off his knowledge of how you can go and get money, and where to, how to go and get the money.
And that, you know, you do need a certain amount of expertise in there, but time will tell. Maybe I'm wrong.
Could, but what we want to do is let's get into sort of anything else that you want to sort of cover off for what your plans are for the brewery. I know that I think you said once you've got all the tin in, I can like have a gander around, which is great.
You can come down and watch the install if you want.
Actually, that would be amazing. I'd actually love to see that.
So, brewery,
I've never seen a brewery being set up from scratch. Actually, that's a very educational thing even for me.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. I mean, we've had a lot of conversations with the guys in Dundalk about it, but Steve is on site up there now, pretty much for the next 2 weeks, watching the finishing stuff happen, and then it'll start to get chipped down. So I'll know by the end of next week, depends on how the wet testing goes. No doubt we'll find issues with the piping and with tanks and wells and stuff, so probably another week or two involved in getting that tidied up, and then we'll start to install. So as it's getting installed, you're more than welcome to come down, have a look, take some pics, watch it go in. Steve will show you around, you know, no problem. I'd welcome anyone. I've sort of said, I've had one or two private messages from people on VR who haven't got involved in all the bullshit and just gone, you know, is there any chance to come down and have a look around? And I'm like, listen, you know, if you want to see the install, you want to come down and talk to Steve, you want to come down and brew with us, you want to come down and look around, you're more than welcome. You'd be treated just like anyone would be treated when you come down. We look after you, we'll buy you a cup of coffee, but you're not special because you're a VR member. My own personal opinion is I don't think those guys do a good job for craft beer. I think they're, if I look at how negative they are towards certain things, you know, even us, before they knew anything about us, it was a whole chain of stuff I believe was negative. Now I'm sort of talking to it, I haven't read all of it, I've had some people tell me about it, but I you know, let's be positive about the contains that are
starting. Craft beer is meant to be positive because it's meant to be flying a flag in the face of the man in the suit.
There's a bit of beer snob that's crept into it, right? And there's a great video online if you can find it, and I cannot remember the link, but it's
I'll
on YouTube.
Find it.
And it's got, you know, it's got to the stage in America where there's about 5% of beer people who are just so far over the edge, like mine was back in the 90s, you know. And there's this video, and you think it's a documentary at the start, with the guy sitting there with a camera talking to people drinking beer, going, have a taste of that. And there's a guy going, the first guy is like, oh my god, that's the most disgusting thing I've ever tasted. What the fuck is that? That is absolutely terrible. Jesus, how could you make me drink that? Unless it's a lambic. If it's a lambic, it's one of the best beers I've ever tasted in my life. And then it goes to another guy, and he's sitting there and he's going, taste the beer, and he goes, yeah. You know, Dave, the brewer, he was going through a divorce there recently. You can really taste it in this brew. And there's shit like that that comes across. I love beer. I love talking about beer. No one has a right or wrong opinion in beer. You like what you like. I love wine. No one has a wrong or right opinion in wine. I like what I like. Some people don't like what I drink. I don't like what other people drink. Who cares? If enough people are buying my beer and they're happy with it, and my ratings are high, that's all I'm interested in.
Again, beer, the subjective. I always call it like the ultimate conversation starter and finisher.
Yeah.
The same token. Depending. If you're in Ireland, it's a bad finisher.
Well, the finish usually ends in, well, I love you. No, the only thing is, you know, it's not just the brewery that's Irish. I'm just showing you some stuff here. It's like everything that we can produce in Ireland, we are producing in Ireland. All our beer taps and fonts are handmade in Kilcock, in the joinery in Kilcock. So every single one of them is individual, and that's what you see, the wooden forms you see in the bar when you go in to drink our beer. All our beer mats, tent cards, labels, all produced in Lupin, designed
just literally down the road. You fall there.
Designed by girl who lives in Kilcock, and all produced down in Lupin. Our carts and our bottle openers, which you haven't seen, I'll get you a branded bottle opener, which is a stick and a nail, basically. And it is literally the carpenter cuts out a piece of wood and then bangs a nail into it, bends it down, it works beautifully. Piece of twine on the end. It's fucking class. And they're all handmade in Kilcock as well. So the only thing we haven't been able to do in Kilcock is, obviously, if you brew our first batch of beer, from now on that'll happen. Glassware, you can't get bottles, and you can't get ceramic mugs, and you can't get pint glasses in Ireland.
Yeah, bottling is the big thing, and even when I was thinking about this, no one at this point has even decided to set up a bottling collective for craft beer brewers in this country. I think most people ship it off to somewhere up in Northern Ireland. Again, it's the UK.
Queen's in Northern Ireland, and then you've got the UK. There's a load of places in the UK, Everard's and Thomas Hardy and Fuller's and people like that will do it for you. There's loads of options in the UK. You're tankering it across, you're bringing it back in. Does that make you know Irish craft as well? Where do we draw the line?
Good point.
But you have to do what you have to do. But there is a number of people in the market looking at putting in a large bottling line. So it'll change in the next 6 months. We're putting a bottling line in on site. We're putting it in for our beers, but we're going to offer that out to craft people as well. It's not, if we do bottle beer for other people, I don't mind that. I'm delighted with that business, but I'm still putting the bottling line in, even if it's just for...
It's an expensive bastard of a thing to stick into a brewery. Whatever about the tin and the operation of that and the utility costs around that and the ingredients and hoping to God that you get to the end, it comes out of your FV and everything's all good, and you go, okay, now I can actually go and put it in a keg, cask, bottle, whatever else. But putting a bottling thing in, it seems to be like ridiculously expensive, and especially when I went looking at it myself, even a small modest one, like you're still outlaying like five figures for the bloody thing.
A bottling for what we need to do is going to cost us in excess of half a million.
Ouch.
So that's the reality of putting a bottling line in that you're happy to put your liquid into and know that it comes out the other side of the bottling line the same way it went in. You know, it's the same quality. I could put a bottling line in up there for 60,000 or 70,000 in the second half.
Because there's a sterilization thing as well. A lot of people don't seem to realize when you're talking bottling beers, like it almost has to be like a semi-hermetic like environment.
It's a food production environment. Yeah. Everything's got to be enclosed.
Oxidization of the air getting in, tampering the beer before it gets into the bottle. If your bottle, bottle proofing your beer, letting it grow in that and get better in it, like anything which is in the air, which is captured in there, just kills that process. You open the bottle of beer and you're like, Jesus Christ, what happened to my beer?
You've also got to have stuff like, you know, checkers on the line to make sure stuff is full within regulations. If it's 330 mil that it's within a tolerance, you got to make sure that nothing, you talk about oxygen getting in, what if a bloody piece of glass or something falls in? You got to test all these things, you got to weigh the bottle at the end, make sure it's what it's supposed to be. It's expensive, so you can do it on the cheap. And there is a couple of bottling lines in Ireland, you know, Porterhouse have one, I think. One of the guys in Cork has a small bottling line, I believe Galway Bay or Galway Hooker, one of the guys have put a small line in. If we're going to put a bottling line in, it's going to be a bottling line that can do what we need to do for the next 10 years. I'm not going to go and spend 100 grand on one. It needs to be the right bottling line. So I'm hoping we're going to do that in Q4 this year. So October, November is when I'd aim to do that.
Wow, that's like a huge investment. So yeah, like again, like great, very Irish story. You know, it's been great actually being able to sit down and talk to you about this again, because it's dispelling like a lot of ale and BS that's been out there, number one, like being able to get that out of the way, number two, being able to find out about something which is in my backyard as well that's coming in. Here
I read on your Twitter account when you said you were going to come talk to us, and someone posted, Wayne or someone like that posted, oh my god, you know, we get rid of all the mystery surrounding this brewery. There's mystery there because no one's picked up the fucking phone. You know, come talk to us.
Yeah, rule number one, I actually pick up a phone and ring the dude, and I've been ringing around other breweries as well, trying to get in. Again, I want to do the same thing, go into all the breweries, I want to share their stories. I mean, like, there's going to come a point in time where like a lot of these guys are underway, and I'll go in, I want to talk about like more like specific like headaches, hassles and horse shit around small things setting their business, like beers that they put out, what they learned from the failures of them. I've been able to get into that because I think it's like the failure stories are actually almost, in terms of like when you launch beers, beers are better than, like, if you think about like Guinness, like that that pale version of Guinness that they tried to release like twice. Guinness Light, yeah.
I'll tell you what, we could write a book about the last 6 months between, you know, between trying to get this business up and running, the shit that Molson Coors have given me in the background, because they're not happy that I've gone out on my own. All the different hoops you've got to jump through to open a brewery in this country. The revenue rules are atrocious. There's great that there's duty breaks for small breweries, but our revenue rules in this country are absolutely anti-business. The bonds that have to be put in place, it's not an easy thing to do, and everything else that goes with it, trying to just get a business set up and running and make sure that you've got enough money in the bank every day to keep fucking doing what you're doing. Like,
yeah, you've got to be able to drive your car to work and all the rest of that kind of good stuff.
I've definitely got some grey hair like in the last few months. Alan's lost.
It's not that bad.
Alan's lost is fucking there. But and I've had as many sleepless nights as I've slept sound since September. That's part and parcel again, getting it up and running. But I'm happy with where we're at, and I'm happy with what we're doing. So,
look, what I'm going to do is the podcast is going to go out. By the time everyone's listening to this, probably Saturday and Sunday when they're doing it. What I'm going to do is, as I sort of get to see more of the brewery going into place, Niall's cool. What I'll do is I'll post up some pictures on the blog. Absolutely, again. Good to get out there. I'm sure you're probably going to fire stuff out. You've got the McGargles Twitter account going anyway. Actually, one thing I wanted to touch on, the new beers that you're going to bring in, are you going to keep it all in the McGargles brand, or are you going to like multi brand?
No, we're going to have another brand.
TBC.
We have the name and the brand I'm done. It's a slightly different sort of focus in terms of what we're going to do. So it's going to be much more complex beers, much more ambitious beers. So we're going to have a lot of fuck ups as we try and produce some decent beer for this one, because we're going to push the limits of what we think we can do. And we're going to try and celebrate everything that is brewing and distilling in this town when we do it. And that's the intent of the second brand, is to really bring that to life. And I don't think that's a brand we'll probably sell outside of Ireland, to be honest. So we'll see how it goes. But that'll be our next brand. And you know, obviously we do San Miguel as well, and we've got, which is the agency for here, which... to be, you know, the cash from that helps us invest in our brewery in Kilcock, so
keeps paying the bills.
And we might do a few other agency brands as well. Let's see what happens. We're not precious. I don't think you say I can't sell San Miguel because I produce craft beer or small batch beer. Who the fuck says I can't do what I want?
Yeah, look, I want to say thanks to Niall for giving me the time. Like, there's been a sort of a number of sort of scheduling things trying to get this all together, but it's great that I was actually able to get like the first one out the block. And look, hopefully we'll get Niall on the show at another stage, talk about other stuff with the beer, talk with the state of beer, maybe we can get into, maybe with Steve. Actually, I'd love to bring Steve on for a like a master brewer's, like, this is brewing 101, motherfucker.
Yeah, he'd love to do that. Yeah, he'd be delighted with it. Some brewers are quite introverted and like playing in their brewery and not talking to people. Steve likes doing that, but he's far from fucking introverted, I can tell you, especially with a couple of beers on him. So he's good crack, like, and he'd love to. He'd love, you know, his mission is his dream. So his mission is to educate people about beer.
So what we'll do is I'll put up all the links on the Tumblr pages this is going up. I'll put up a couple other bits and pieces as well from there, and then you'll be able to check the show out again next week. So until next time, may whatever's in front of you be real beer and not some fizzy piss.